Hey y'all. So I thought that this week's readings really connected well with the Floris and Rosa readings from week two, the Undoing Appropriateness piece. One of my main questions after reading the article was about who can act as the white listening subject, and we talked about how the white listening subject isn't a specific person, but it's an ideological position where we view people of color, their language as a through a racialized way, where the way that we perceive their language is racialized by the white subject, and about how this white subject is oftentimes institutions, such as schools, and because schools are such a major part of students' everyday lives, that's a really important thing to look at when we're talking about the white listening subject. I thought that the concept of white listening subject was interesting with what Barrett talked about, with the process of the model of the process of language subordination, which includes quote, conformers being held up as positive examples. And whenever I read the Hannah and Robinson piece about the Crip Linguistics Goes to School, I thought this was really interesting with how they talked about teacher prep programs, and how white native teachers are perceived as being naturally qualified to be teachers, while teachers of color are seen as not languaging in a way that is appropriate for them to be part of the school body that is the white listening subject. And similar to lead to that, you know, in deaf education, teachers who are not inept at signing, but who, you know, have a socially acceptable way of using spoken English are seen as being able to be a teacher of deaf children, whereas a teacher who's a proficient signer but considered to not be a proficient user of English, we say that they're not suitable to be teachers of deaf children. So it's kind of a situation where it's clear that we're upholding this idea of, you know, white able-bodied teachers using white able-bodied language in the classroom, and how we kind of reward speakers of that language that, you know, the speakers, it's really not even necessarily the way they're, the language that they're using, but it's the bodies that are producing that language, white able-bodied languages. They're being held up as positive examples of language speaking. And then those teachers are becoming part of the white listening subject and policing language and upholding those ways of speaking or communicating. And then for me, that was really interesting too with the Baker Bell piece. You know, thinking about who can act as the white listening subject. And it made me think about my own experiences growing up in a very white area in Appalachia. So one quote from that piece that stuck up to me was, quote, "For example, an indigenous child who communicates in an indigenous language, a black child who communicates in black language, a Latinx child who communicates in Spanglish, and an Asian American child who communicates in Asian American English will experience linguistic discrimination differently from a white child who communicates in Appalachian English." So I think this is a common misconception that occurs in where I live. It's a very white community, and a lot of people there do speak Appalachian English, but a lot of the white people there don't think about the overlapping identities influencing how people view language. So, you know, those white speakers of Appalachian English feel like they can't act as the white listening subject because they're part of a marginalized language community, but they're failing to see how their privilege as a white person impacts the way that people are perceiving their language use. So even when they're using a marginalized way of languaging, whenever they speak, their language isn't being racialized in the same way that it would be for POC speakers. And then when this happens, those white speakers from the white marginalized language communities think that they can't be part of the white listening subject entity because they're speaking a marginalized form of English. But when they think about that, when they, you know, have that perception, it completely ignores the fact that race and linguistic discrimination are just so interconnected. And it's failing to realize that, like, it's not just about language, but it's about who's using the language. So even though they're using a marginalized way of speaking English, because they're white, they're being perceived differently than a person of color using a different or the same marginalized language. For example, a black person using Appalachian English, their Appalachian English would be perceived differently than a white person using Appalachian English. So I guess it just made me think more about how so many different people, you know, really anyone can be part of this white listening subject, no matter, even if they're part of a marginalized linguistic community, or, you know, even if they're, you know, in a position that might not be with the most power, they can still serve as that white listening subject that perpetuates ideas of whiteness and able-bodiedness and in language.